इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य श्री प्रभुपाद की अजगोप श्रीमद भागवताम की हरिनाम संकीर्तन की गौर प्रेमानंदी ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ग्लोरीज टू गुरु एंड गौरांग जय जय श्री चैतन्य ध्याय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्तवृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्तवृंद Reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, continuation, liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Yadyapi se mukta hoi pancha paraka. Sorry. Yadyapi se mukta hoi pancha paraka. Salokya samipa saruta sarsi sahuja a. There are five kinds of liberations. So who knows what are those five kinds of liberations? Can tell me. Who is the shastric person, people here? Anybody know? Taking the same planets as the Lord, what is that called? Salokya. What is the other one? Similar bodily forms, it's called Sarupya. Same opulence called Sharsti. Samipya, what is that? Being in the association of the Lord. And the last one, which we don't at all, but we reject completely, what is that? Merging into the existence of the Lord called Sahujya. There are five kinds of liberation: Salokya, Samipya, Sarupya, Sharsti, and Sahujya. Salokya means that after material liberation, one is promoted to the planet where the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, resides. Samipya means remaining an associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarupya means attaining a four-handed form exactly like that of the Lord. Sarsti means attaining opulences like those of the Supreme Lord. And Sahujya means merging into the Brahman effulgence of the Lord. These are five kinds of liberations. But it explains the devotees, they reject all these five kinds because bhakti, pure bhakti, is considered to be more attractive to the soul. Salokya dara chariyare hoi seva dwara tabu kadachit paktakara angi kara. If there is a chance to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a pure devotee sometime accepts the Salokya, Sarupya, Samipya, or Sarsti forms of liberation, but never Sahujya. Sahujya sunite bhaktira hoya griha baya. Naraka vanchaye tabu sahujana loya. A pure devotee does not like even to hear about sahujya mukti, which inspires him with fear and hatred. Indeed, the pure devotee would rather go to hell than merge into the effulgence of the Lord. Purport. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati has sung Kaivalya Narakayeta. The impersonalist conception of becoming one with the effulgence of the Lord is exactly like hell. Therefore, of the five types of liberation, the first four, Salokya, Samipya, Sarupya, and Sarsti, are not so undesirable because they can be avenues of service to the Lord. Nonetheless, a pure devotee of the Lord rejects even these types of liberation. He knows only to aspire to serve Krishna birth after birth. He is not very interested in stopping the repetition of birth and death, for he simply desires to serve the Lord, even in hellish circumstances. Consequently, the pure devotee hates and fears sahujya mukti, merging into the effulgence of the Lord. This merging is due to an offense committed against the transcendental loving service of the Lord, and therefore it is not at all desirable for a pure devotee. And many impersonalists, many yogis and tapasis, those who want power, and those who want freedom from material miseries, and those who want some position, spiritual position, and they aspire for sahujya, which means you attain a state where one merges. There's two types of merging. There's merging into the bodily effulgence of the Lord, and there's merging into the body of the Lord. And both are considered to be undesirable for a pure devotee. Yes, there's two kinds. One is the, you see, some demons got, they merged directly into the body of the Lord when Krishna killed them. But there's others who merge into the bodily effulgence of the Lord. Merging into the body is higher than merging into the body effulgence. But both are considered to be undesirable for a pure devotee of the Lord. Why? Because it's temporary. And ultimately, a devotee wants to serve. The treasure of one's relationship in Krishna consciousness is the opportunity to serve. That is the real gift of Krishna consciousness. As one makes progress in devotional service, one becomes inspired to serve more and more and more and more. This service attitude is the nature of the soul, as the soul is by nature fully engaged in the spiritual world with the Lord, constantly meditating on how to serve the Lord, because service is an expression of love. So as one makes progress in devotional service, one is desires to do more and more service. That is actually, but sahujya actually is a position where one doesn't get a chance to serve. It is a position where one is simply wants to enjoy spiritual bliss without service. And ultimately what happens is that after some time, because there's no service, one falls down. They come back to the material world, back to take up material activities. Sometimes they open hospitals, sometimes they do welfare work for people in general. And that's pretty much the result of that kind of merging, is that they lose their position and then again come back to the material world. Because the nature of the soul is activity. If we're not performing any activity, we don't have any life. If we're not performing spiritual activity, we're performing material activity. Because there's no question of being inactive. Inactive means dead matter, stone. But the soul is by nature active. So it either has to act materially or spiritual, either one. So ultimately, sahujya means a state, it can be described as a sleep state, where activity is suspended in a state of what we call unconsciousness. And in that state, one is feeling the happiness of the freedom from material miseries. When all material miseries have stopped, there's some happiness, there's some pleasure. The first chapter in Nectar of Devotion describes that there are three kinds of happiness. Material happiness, the happiness of merging into the body of the Lord, and the happiness of devotional service. Each considered to be progressively greater. The happiness that the impersonalists get in merging into the body of the Lord is greater than material happiness. It's much greater. Material happiness is not happiness at all. It's actually just a relief from suffering. It's like an antidote for the pain of living in the material world. If a moron beats his head against a wall, and then for a few minutes he stops beating his head against the wall, and he thinks, oh, this is so nice. That's material happiness. Material happiness means stop beating your head against the wall for a few minutes. And then again, the wall is there. That's pretty much the understanding of material happiness. But there is what is called a cessation of material miseries, because material life is miserable. It's totally miserable. Birth is miserable, death is miserable, old age is miserable, diseases are miserable. In between, we're suffering, our body's suffering, our minds are suffering, other people are bothering us. Dogs are barking at us, government agents are trying to collect taxes off us, mosquitoes are harassing us, flies, and there's so many pain. And then if those two things are not happening, and then it's rain, drought, pestilence, earthquakes, hurricanes, tornadoes, snow, whatever you can, excessive heat, excessive cold, famine. And these are all what's called miseries of the higher energies, the higher powers. So there's four main miseries, birth, death, disease, and old age. And then there's in between, there's all these other miseries that you constantly get as a fringe benefit of having this material body. So it's not a very pleasant situation. So somehow or other, if there's some cessation of these miseries for a few moments, we think, oh, I'm happy. So that is actually material happiness. There's some relief from the pressure of these pains. And that's called happiness. That's material happiness. But better than that, there's happiness of liberation, where there's no more material pain. One is situated in their spiritual existence. They feel the pleasure of the soul. And in that pleasure of the soul, they feel bliss. There's some happiness there. But again, because there's no devotional service, again, they have to fall down. Arunik krishchena padampadantata padantiyada. Again, you fall down into the material energy again to take up material activities. You get free from the material energy. You attain the state of self-realization, and self, small s, not capital, small s. That means you understand your nature as spirit soul. But then again, because you don't serve, again you fall down, because the constitutional nature of the soul is to love, and so love comes out by service. Service is the manifestation of one's loving activities. So that happiness that is there in the impersonalist or the sahujya, it's like it's compared to a sleep state, when if you're miserable or if you're tired, you go to sleep and you forget you're tired, you forget you're miserable, and you're somewhat in a different state of consciousness, not aware of the sufferings of your waking existence. That is like merging into the existence of the body of the Lord. But again, because of that being a temporary situation and no service, of course, if you're in that state and then you begin devotional service from that state, then you can go high. To have impersonal liberation is not something wrong. It's part of the process. But if you stay there and think that's the goal, then you're stuck. Then what happens? You fall down again. So you must continue to move up to the platform of rendering devotional service. That's the real constitutional position of all living beings, is to render loving service to the Lord. And in that state, one is completely satisfied, because that is the position of the soul. Okay. Any questions? Yes.
Can you explain how the devotee doesn't want the first four types of liberation and then the association alone?
How he doesn't want?
The association alone, the organization alone.
Well, it says here. Therefore, the five types of liberation, the first four, are not so undesirable, because they can be avenues of service to the Lord. They're not so undesirable, because they can be ways of serving the Lord. Ultimately, the goal is service, not liberation. Prabhupada would define liberation as achieving the state of bhakti. Real liberation means to attain bhakti. But these are also available. One can... The idea is ultimately pure bhakti means selflessness. In these other states, there's some desire for one's own pleasure, personal desire for one's own pleasure. Real bhakti means no desire for one's pleasure, desire for the pleasure of the Lord only. That's real bhakti. And the soul becomes, because the soul is connected to the Lord. So it is explained here that these are not undesirable if they can be used as ways of serving the Lord. But if they're not, and then it is explained that a devotee doesn't aspire for any of these five kinds of liberation at all. He doesn't want any of them. He just wants bhakti. So there's one verse from, what is that? Sikshastika. Nadanam, nadyanam, nasundarim, kavitam ba jagadisha kamaye, Manma janmani janmani ishvari bhavata bhaktirahi tuki twayi. So the Lord is explaining the position of pure devotion. I don't want wealth. I don't want followers. I don't want the pleasures of the opposite sex. What do I want? I want your causeless devotional service, janmani janmani, birth after birth. I'm willing to go birth after birth. Doesn't matter, as long as I can serve you. And that's the position of pure devotion. Pure devotion. On the higher platform, all there is service. That's all. Just pure, the desire to serve Krishna, that's all. So these other types of liberation are not undesirable if they're a means of service. But in and of themselves, a devotee doesn't want that because he sees them as somewhat of a compromise. If they're not conducive to his service to the Lord. In general, there's one verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita that says that these five are even considered hell by the devotee. Why? Because one who has received the special glance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. See, this is the key. The real key is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's Lord Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the key of the real ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. Taking complete shelter of Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They have broken the storehouse of love of God. They're distributing the contents freely. And they're providing an ocean of devotion. And one who simply gets a drop of that mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they don't want anything else. Prabodhananda Saraswati, he says, you should read some of the prayers of Prabodhananda Saraswati. He's talking about the other incarnations of the Lord as being undesirable. He's rejecting the other manifestations of the Lord. Right? You've read also? Yeah, he talks in Prabodhananda Saraswati's prayers. Yeah, he doesn't even talk about, you know, he talks about some of the other manifestations of God. He says, don't even concern, I don't want to be bothered with that. I just want Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Don't. You can't think of anything else. And that is the special feature of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he's so merciful, and he's so kind, and he's so willing to, even with a little effort, open up the doorhouse of love of God. And he's given that mercy to Lord Nityananda. And both of them together, they have a plan. They have a plan to trap everybody by their mercy. Yes?
Can I read just a little question tomorrow? Is there a finite number of souls? And I guess a question kind of broad. All of these entities are reincarnated and they get different. They can either be demon or Democrat. So we want to ask then, is there a certain number of souls that just alternate bodies?
What do you mean? What do you mean? I don't understand the question. Rephrase it.
Okay. Different people, like a king, such a picture, was reincarnated as a demon.
Right.
Or a god like a king.
Right.
My question is there, since you got nothing moving from birth to birth,
right.
I'm saying, is there in this universe, I guess, a certain number of souls and they transmigrate from one form to the next? Is there a set number in the universe? That's all I'm saying.
By receiving the answer to this question, how will it help you in your devotional service? By receiving this answer, how will it help you?
A lot of people, when you're talking about the Nandagarma,
okay,
they believe that we are worshiping more than one God, and that they do not believe in reincarnation. So,
okay,
not having the answer sort of makes you not have any credibility.
Okay, very good. I wanted to hear that. That's good. Ultimately, souls are not restricted to any universe. A soul can go anywhere. But due to one's particular karma, they're in a certain universe or on a certain planet. And you break it down even farther within a certain country, from a certain family, a certain body, like that. So karma works in such a way as to position oneself in a certain way. And so the bounds of karma are within a certain realm. But one can break those bounds of karma and create a new karmic field, which will transport one to other realms of existence. Like that. Karma is very, you know, it covers, you know, a wide range of varieties of manifestations. So just like, give you an example, within the universe there are 8,400,000 species of life, but they're not all on this planet. They're not all on this planet. Sometimes the scientists, they say that we have discovered so many species of life, but we don't come up with such figures. Where do you get such large figures from? Well, actually, the understanding is that these living entities are there, but they're in different planets. Okay? So you can even go beyond the universe. If you manifest a certain tendency, then you can break through that universe and find yourself an inhabitant of another universe. And each universe has its particular type of karmic, you know, situation. But ultimately, those who do not believe in reincarnation can be explained to in a different way. Just like Prabhupada would always use the example, just like you have a little baby's body, and then you have a young person's body, and a middle-aged body, and then a little older, and gradually you get old and die. So that person that's witnessing all the changes is the same one. You remember, at least to some degree, your different stages. So that seer that is experiencing the changes, what is that? That is distinct from the changes. So that is what is that? You know, we say consciousness, but what is consciousness? Consciousness is a symptom of the soul. So we explain the proof of realization by the fact that things are changing, but yet there's a constant within that change. And that's one of the ways to understand reincarnation. And then there's other, you can give them scientific evidence, and there's also scientific research that's being done on it. There's so many things. There's one man, his name is Ian Stevenson. He's a professor at the University of Virginia. He has a team of associates that anytime they hear some case of reincarnation, some story, he sends out his team and he does research and he compiles it in a book. He's got over 3,000 reported cases of reincarnation and he's written it all in books. He's a Westerner, he's just, you know, some philosophy teacher. So others mention much evidence. People say, I believe or I don't believe. But you may believe that there's nothing outside on the other side of the wall. Does that mean there's nothing there because you believe it or don't believe it? Right? What does reality have to do with anybody's belief? Everybody has their own concocted opinion of what's right. Right? I think, I believe, maybe, it's like this. You know, there's dozens of books of all, well, they're all mental speculation. Somebody's beliefs, somebody's ideas, somebody's stuff doesn't make it right. I believe there's no God. Well, who cares what you believe? Doesn't make a difference. God is there whether you believe it or not. So a person's belief doesn't make a thing right or not. And one has to understand things according to authority. Authority is the understanding of what is truth or not truth. Then one has to understand what is bona fide authority. One cannot simply understand things without an authority. So we don't accept the idea of belief as being a valid understanding of what is truth. There was a devotee well, not a devotee, but a person who came to our community in New Vrindavan many years ago. And he was believing that I'm not going to die. That was his philosophy. You know, nowadays people have so many concocted ideas of what is reality. As many people are there is that many ideas. So he was convinced that you couldn't preach to him, couldn't talk to him. He was convinced he wasn't going to die. That was his philosophy. I'm the exception, he said. I mean, so you know, this place, the material world, is a crazy house. It's a crazy house. Many years ago, when we started our movement in Krishna consciousness, back in 1968, I believe it was, the devotees were walking around with robes, and they were dancing and chanting, and it was all a new phenomena in the West. And people were saying, these people are crazy. They're running around with their bed sheets, jumping up and down, they got no hair, and they just look, you know, like something from some outer space, you know. So people, they were saying, you're crazy. And so Prabhupada wrote one pamphlet, Who is Crazy? He said, you say we are crazy, and we say you are crazy. So let's figure out who's right. So then he wrote this explanation. It actually was the first pamphlet I ever came across in Krishna consciousness. And it explained that if you don't know who you are, that is an indication of insanity. If you think you're something than what you actually are, that means you're insane. At least to whatever degree. Right? If you think I'm something, but you're not that something, that means you need help. You're off. So the idea is that people think I'm this body. I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm a cat, I'm a dog, I'm a cockroach, I'm a, you know, whatever you want to may think, I'm American, I'm Indian, I'm black, I'm white, I'm old, I'm young. These are all symptoms of the disease. The disease is that we think we're this body. That's the problem. So Prabhupada wrote that very elaborate explanation that one who doesn't know who they are, then they don't know what they're supposed to do. If you know who you are, then you know what you're supposed to do. But if you don't know who you are, then you might do things that are... Right? If you walk into an insane asylum and a man's running around there with his hand in his shirt saying, I'm Napoleon, right? He may think he's Napoleon, but everybody else will see this man is crazy. Right? So everybody is running around and they're all thinking that there's something that they're actually not. Hello, how are you? I'm fine. Yes, you're going to die. Yes, I know, but I'm fine. You're fine, I'm fine, everybody's fine. Yes, you're going to die. Yes, I know, but I'm fine. This is Prabhupada. I'm not making this up. Prabhupada was speaking like this on one tape. Everybody said, yeah, everything's fine. You're going to die? Yes, I know, but I'm fine. And people are living in illusion. This world is an illusion. And people, the more you go deeper into the world, the more you get into the illusion. This is called the illusionary energy. So the idea is to come out of the illusion. Jeep jago, goda chanda bole kota nidra jayomaya pishta chita kole. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving the formula to get out. Chant the holy names of the Lord. Dance. Take Krishna prasadam. Engage in devotional service. These are the antidotes for the illusion. This is the medicine that counteracts the disease. So everybody has their opinions, but we take Krishna's opinion. We take the opinion of the acharyas. What is reality? And people may accept or they may not accept. Our job is to do whatever we can in many different ways as we can, is to reach people with this message. because they're all suffering. And we don't want to see people suffering. We want to help them to understand what is their actual position, how to become happy. When you know who you are, and when you know what you're supposed to do, you actually become happy again. So it's explained, what is night for the introspective sage is a time of waking for the materialistic person. And what is night for the materialistic person is a time of awaking for the introspective sage. This is from the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter. So there's like two different people in the world. There's those who know and those who don't know. And those who are trying to know, at least. So we have to try to interest people in trying to learn about how to become truly happy. Like that. So this is Krishna consciousness. If you want to preach to people, you want to make them better their life, give them the holy name. If you have to give them something, give them the holy name. If a person chants, their life begins right from that beginning, the time they chant. That is their chance to again come back to reality. That is the medicine. Give them the holy name. We can sit and talk philosophy with people all day, and philosophy is good. But unless it helps them really move forward in their life, if it's just an intellectual discussion and debate, and nothing changes, then what is the value? When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so eager to somehow or other spread this movement that he's doing whatever he can. He's empowering his devotees to do it. He himself took sannyas. Why? In order to reach a certain section of people. He told Lord Nityananda, get married. And Lord Nityananda was an avaduta. He was just, he would just go around, chant, dance. He was in total bliss all the time. And Lord Chaitanya said, get married. Try to save those in the household ashram. He said, you can preach to those people. I'm a sannyasi. I can't preach effectively to the grihasthas as much. So Lord Nityananda made a sacrifice, got married, in order to preach to that section. So they always, Lord Chaitanya became a teacher so he could reach students. He became a pundit so he could reach the philosophers. He became ultimately a sannyasi so he could reach a broader level. He kept changing different situations, in order to reach different classes of people. And that's his mission, to somehow or other reach everybody with this message. And then you see the Prabhupada, he was criticized so heavily for bringing devotional service to people who was considered to be, by Vedic culture, to be unsuitable to even get a chance to perform devotional service. There's restrictions, and you have to have certain births, certain qualifications to engage in devotional service. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu broke through that. That's why he's called Karuna Avatar. He's most merciful. His mercy is unlimited. He's not considering who's qualified, who's unqualified, whether you want it. He's out there to give it, whatever way it takes. And Srila Prabhupada was in that mood to somehow reach every conditioned soul with this message. But in this age, to reach people is so hard because people are locked in the illusion. They're so locked. They're so locked in the illusion that they don't even think they're locked in the illusion. If you preach, sometimes you threaten people by destroying their illusion and they get angry. Don't destroy my illusion. Let me stay miserable. Really? It's like that. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's doing whatever he can. So therefore, the holy name is the means to go everywhere and anywhere. Somehow or other, give people the holy name, whatever way you can. That is the key. If they begin chanting, if they begin doing something in regards to Krishna consciousness, The path back home has begun. It's begun. Yes.
One time Prabhupada said that chanting is the medicine and prasadam is the diet.
Is the diet.
One is sick, one requires two things, proper diet and medicine.
Yes.
But Prabhupada also said
prasadam. Yeah. He said, actually, that was a very wonderful statement. I always remember that statement. It was right at the end of one lecture. He ended his lecture with that statement. He said, this material world is like a hospital. And everybody's sick. And when you're sick, you have to do two things. You have to get a diet and you have to get medicine. So the medicine is the holy name and the diet is Krishna Prasad. Everybody at the end said, Jai Prabhupada! That's the fact. These two things are so powerful. That's the end of this age. Chanting is the weapon. Prasadam is the secret weapon. It's that weapon that people don't know. Because if you take prasad, you get somehow or other, you get hooked. And you get some taste of spiritual life. Yes, you have a question there? And Dominic?
Sometimes I talk about God Almighty. So,
that's right, let them pray that. That's fine. If a person is religious, encourage them in their whatever religion. Hallow be thy name. So the name is hollow. What name is that? Well, whatever name you want. Chant the holy name of God. Your prayer is saying, hallowed be thy name. The name is holy. God's holy name. Whether it's Krishna or whatever holy name, it's holy.
You were saying also about craziness. They seem that people of the same type of craziness hang out together. So if I was crazy like this person, then you might be better than other people with the same craziness hang out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like reality is an interpretation. It's when they don't see the one.
That's why people live in fear. Fear is a consciousness of being absorbed in illusion. When you're absorbed in illusion, you're in fear. When you're absorbed in truth, there's no fear. You're fearless. Fear means to be absorbed in the illusion. Yes.
Before I came here, I was my roommate. I lived in the studio with him and we would talk about God. And the reason I ended up leaving is that I scared him a lot, actually. And I didn't need to at all. I felt, in a way, I felt bad.
We have to do what we have to do. When we know something is correct, then we should do it. Some people will like you. Some people will hate you. Some people may follow you. Prabhupada says, the dogs bark, the caravan moves on. People will always... There's a nice story. You can please some of the people, some of the time. You can please all of the people some of the time, but you can't please all of the people all of the time. So when one knows what's right, then they should live for truth. If we don't live for truth, we can never be happy. Even if we don't make, even if we can't come to the platform of being on the platform of truth, we should aspire to live for truth anyway. To live in the illusion means to ultimately suffer, to be in ignorance. There's that story, a man and an old man and a young boy, and they got a horse, and they're traveling. So the old man's riding the horse, and the boy's walking alongside, and they come to the first town. And people say, just see, look at that old man, he's so selfish. Why is he sitting on that horse? The boy has to walk. So, the next town,
The boy gets on the horse, and the old man's walking alongside. And then the people in the next town say, just see, look at that old man. He's so old. And that young boy, he's sitting on the horse, he's riding. That old man has to walk. Such unfairness, cruelty to the old man. So they said, okay. So the next town, they both come riding in. So the people said, do you see that poor horse? Look at that. And both of them are, all that weight is on that horse, and that horse is just suffering. What to do? So the next time they both start walking, and they're walking along with the horse. So this time they both walk. So people say, just see, they got a horse, what a waste. They're not even using it. No matter what you do, people are not going, they're always going to criticize you. No matter what you do, even if you're God, you get criticized. It's a fact. Even Krishna gets criticized. We don't like Krishna, we like Ram. Krishna's like, we can't figure him out. He's doing so many things. But Ram, we can deal with. But then again, people, you know, they always find fault. They even find fault with God. And so no matter what you do, people will always find fault or criticize or, you know, no matter who you are. And you have to live for truth. If you live for truth and if you please God, then that's fine. That's all you have to do. It's not that we're arrogant and we don't care what people think. We're humble. We try to be humble. We try to be considerate. But we don't change because people are saying this or doing that. We don't change our life. We're not proud or arrogant that we have the process for self-realization. That Krishna doesn't. Devotees always trying to become humble and also become kind and compassionate by giving this to others. But at the same time, if people take exception to what we're doing or criticize or find some flaw or even try to philosophize, we don't find that a means for adjusting. We're not trying to make friends with the illusion. Who cares about such friends, you know? You know, we want to do the right thing. We want to do the thing, we want to do what Krishna wants us to do. And then we become happy. So you meet so many people that have their own opinions about everything. It's like this, it's like that. And they don't know either. They don't want to let you know they don't know because that will embarrass them. But they're always changing. They're always changing. Okay. Any other points? Yes. Phil?
I'm just going to ask a question concerning that Yananda, what Chaitanya was telling him to be married. Did he, was that just a show?
No. No, there was this time where Lord Chaitanya, he called Lord Nityananda and he whispered something to him. It was a confidential talk. And that talk was not so much known in general. But the acharyas say that what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Lord Nityananda is that, you know, I'm a sannyasi. And, you know, they don't always appreciate me from the grihastha ashram. You try to preach to grihasthas when you're a sannyasi. Sometimes in grihastha say, you know, you're a sannyasi. You don't know what it's like to be a grihastha. You don't know the relevancy of our existence. So it's just like if you're with a group of people who are like yourself and you speak something, then they're more like interested in hearing from you than they are from somebody who is not of their feather or their color or whatever they might want to say. So in the same way, Lord Chaitanya told Lord Nityananda, get married and spread the holy name through the Grihastha ashram. So he did. It was a means simply to reach other conditioned souls, that's all. Otherwise, Lord Nityananda is Lord Nityananda. He's constantly in bliss. He doesn't have to get married. But that was the reason. That was the only reason. Okay? That's again, we have to see, this is Lord Chaitanya's special mercy. He wants to reach everyone. So he's using his entourage, his devotees, to reach other conditioned souls. Yes.
Yeah. I've heard some people argue that consciousness of that confidence is the burden of the intelligence.
But the constant is the brain? What does that mean?
That the awakeness is resides in the brain with the chemical reactions. The chemical reactions that go on with a child is in the youth, an old man. And that function of the brain is going to be numbers.
But where is the brain getting its source of energy from? If you take a brain, what is it? It's just matter. Or there's cases where brain gives you the is the medium. There's a more scientific explanation. Another understanding is just like Daksha. Daksha was, his head was cut off. He was given the head of a goat. But he remained Daksha. He understood I was Daksha. And he was speaking to Lord Shiva as the head of a goat. And it was explained, Prabhupada explains in that purport that the brain is not the source of intelligence. He had a different, completely, he had a ghost head. But he was still aware of the fact that he was Daksha. Also the case of Bhart Maharaj. When he got the body of a deer, he was completely aware that he was Bhart Maharaj in his previous life. He saw himself as a deer. He was in the body of a deer. He was stuck. There's a scientific explanation for this. I'm not exactly sure. Prema Bhakti, you know how this is understood, how the brain is not the intelligence, is not the source of understanding ultimately.
The standard said that it's like you are speaking to the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
Because what Elana actually has to see is that, you know, when he hears from the Bach, he can say that it's really about this is actually the source of the energy. But the energy is not actually coming from the dust. It is coming from the person who is identifying to the microphone.
Yes.
So, the microphone is the channel that is transmitting the message to the box. But behind the microphone, there is a person who is actually speaking. So, it is the consciousness that which actually locates the region of the heart along the soul. So, my intelligence of the ego is actually in the heart, not actually in the brain. Brain is just like the dust, the theory above, which actually brings the knowledge that it actually tells the message to the plant. If something happens to the brain, still a person can actually live. Because the consciousness and intelligence, certain body is not in the brain or somewhere in the plant, but it is the region of the heart, along with the soul. So that is the source of intelligence.
Mm. Okay? Good example. Yes.
Also, it's like the soul can't be localized in time and space. You can't say where is it. As soon as you ask where is it, then you're finding location in time and space or something.
Well, it's mentioned it stays within the heart of the living being. It's this, the energy source within the body, so it's situated in the heart. But the soul is not limited to that situation. The soul is ultimately. But because the soul is attached to this body, and it considers itself not the soul, but the body, so it remains attached to the fact that it's...
There are 900 ways that is tied to the brain.
Yeah.
Ultimately, everything, all the movements of the body is tied to the brain.
Yeah, these nerve endings. Yeah.
I meant to say, in this world we're not eligible. We're not.
Yeah, ultimately the soul is it's not restricted. But in the body it's restricted. It's stuck in the body. Can't get out. Because it has desires to enjoy the body. As soon as it loses its desires to enjoy the body, just like some people, they become so despondent in their life that they can actually die just out of lamentation, despondency. There's no reason to live anymore. They just leave. They just die. And they have no means for living anymore. The soul goes on. We find that also when people lose someone they love. They die out of heartache, lamentation. The whole world seems to be empty. There's no purpose or meaning to life anymore. It's like a dreary void. And then people give up their life simply by the fact that there's no meaning anymore in life. So the soul has no meaning to stay in the body anymore. So it goes. But ultimately, it's when there's meaning, and there's meaning, and that meaning is connected with the body, the soul stays within that body. Because the body still has meaning for the soul. It's like the story of when Lord Nityananda left his home. His father and mother, Hadai Pandit and Padmavati. Hadai Pandit, he watched his son, Lord Nityananda, walk away out of the village of Ekachakra with his sannyasi. He watched him. And he stood in that spot looking at his son going. He was so brokenhearted he couldn't even move. He stayed in that spot for 3 months. Finally he died. After 3 months he didn't move. He stayed in that one spot for 3 months. His mind was so shocked he couldn't. So people die just out of when they feel there's no reason to stay anymore. Some people they want to end it real fast. They commit suicide, but that you get a ghostly body. Some people just die because out of heartbreak, hardship, no meaning to life. In fact, more people die like that than they die in physical death. Somehow or other, you can live in this world and undergo so much physical suffering and still continue on. But when the emotions and the mind starts to suffer, then life becomes unbearable. It becomes unbearable. That's why number one disease in the world is mental illness. People are so afflicted by this. Through life. So ultimately one has to chant the holy names. Otherwise there's no hope. There's no hope, really. Srila Prabhupada used to say, Krishna consciousness is not optional. It's not like you have a choice whether to be Krishna conscious or not. You do. Your choice is either become Krishna conscious or suffer. That's your option. It's like not a very big choice, ultimately. Krishna consciousness means to come back to who you are. And to refuse that means to stay in illusion and ignorance. And illusion and ignorance means to suffer. Right? It's not like it's something optional. Oh, well, I'll be Krishna conscious, or I'll be this conscious, or I'll be that. No, it means, ultimately means suffering, ultimately. Okay, everybody, looks like the weather out there. It's like I've put everybody in a state of suffering. There's some good news. Prasadam is coming up pretty soon. Shall we begin the Bhagavatam class? We have a okay. Okay, chapter 13. This is called Descriptions of Future Manus. Descriptions of Future Manus. What verse is that on the board? Oh. Verse 11 is the first purport. Okay. So I'll just read the summary and get a little taste of Srimad Bhagavatam, and now after you heard me and give you all this painful information. Of the 14 Manus, 6 Manus have already been described. Now, this chapter will consecutively describe each Manu from the 7th to the 14th. The 7th Manu, who is the son of Vibhishwan, is known as Shradhadev. He has 10 sons named Ishvaku, Nabhagya, Drishtya, Saryati, Narishyanta, Nabhagya, Dista, Tarusa, Prasadra, and Vasuman. In this Manvantara, or reign of Manus, among the demigods are the Adityas, the Vasus, the Rudras, the Vishvadevas, the Maruts, the Aswini Kumaras, and the Ribhus. The king of heaven, Indra, is known as Purandara, and the 7 sages are known as Kasyapa, Atri, Vashishta, Vishvamitra, Gautama, Jamadagni, and Bharadwaj. During this period of Manu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, appears in the womb of Aditi in his incarnation as Kasyapa. In the period of the 8th Manu, the Manu is Savarni. His sons are headed by Nirmoka, and among the demigods are the Sutapas. Bali, the son of Virochana, is Indra, and Galava and Parasaram are among the 7 sages. In this age of Manu, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears as Sarvabhauma, the son of Devaguhya and Saraswati. In the period of the 9th Manu, the Manu is Daksa Sarvani. His sons are headed by Bhutaketu, and among the demigods are the Marichigarbhas. Abhuta is Indra, and among the 7 sages is Dutiman. In this period of Manu, the incarnation Rishab is born of Asuman and Ambudara. In the period of the 10th Manu, the Manu is Brahma Sarvani. Among his sons is Burishena, and the 7 sages are Havishman and others. Among the demigods are the Suvasanas, and Shambhu is Indra. The incarnation in this period of Manu is Vikshvaksena, who is a friend of Shambhu, and who was born from the womb of Vaisuchi in the house of a Brahmin named Vishvasrasta. In the period of the 11th Manu, the Manu is Dharma Sarvani, who has 10 sons headed by Satyadharma. Among the demigods are Vihangamas. Indra is known as Vaidhartri. The 7 sages are Aruna and others. In this Manvantara, the incarnation is Dharmasetru, who is born of Vaidritya and Aryaka. In the period of the 12th Manu, the Manu is Rudra Sarvani, whose sons are headed by Devavan. The demigods are the Aritas and others. Indra is Ritadama, and the 7 sages is Tapamurti and others. The incarnation in this Manvantara is Sudama, or Swadama, who is born from the womb of Sunita. His father's name is Satya Saha. In the period of the 13th Manu, the Manu is Deva Sarvani. Among his sons is Chitrasena. The demigods are the Sukamas and others. Indra is Divaspati, and Nirmoka is among the sages. The Manvantara is Yogeshwara, who is born of Devahotra and Brihati. In the period of the 14th Manu, the Manu is Indra Sarvani. Among his sons are Uru and Gambira. The demigods are the Pavitras and others. Indra is Suchi, and among the sages are Agni and Bahu. The incarnation of this Manvantara is known as Brihadbandhu. He is born of Satrayana from the womb of Vaitana. The total duration of the period ruled by these Manus is calculated to be 1,000 Chaturyugas, or 4,300,000 times 1,000 years. A little bit of a time period. So that means 4,300,000,000 years.
Okay, that's the summary of the chapter. Pretty much that's what the chapter will be speaking about. You'll just be hearing the different... In the different verses, you'll hear the different descriptions that I just described. There's a purport in text 11, text 13, and that's it. There's two purports in the entire chapter, text 11 and text 13. Okay. Any comments, questions? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Advaita Prachanda, Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinoda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Advaita Chandra, Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinoda. Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinoda. Reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela Chapter 7, The Lord's Tour of South India. And we're approximately on text 26. Are we starting at the beginning of the page or... Maybe I'll just start at the beginning of this page. It may repeat a couple of verses. We'll just read the English. Although I am in the renounced order of life and Damodar is a brahmachari, he still keeps a stick in his hand just to educate me. According to Damodar, I am still a neophyte as far as social etiquette is concerned. Therefore, he does not like my independent nature. Damodar Pandit and others are more advanced in receiving the mercy of Lord Krishna. Therefore, they are independent of public opinion. As such, they want me to enjoy sense gratification, even though it be unethical. But since I am a poor sannyasi, I cannot abandon the duties of the renounced order, and therefore, I follow them strictly. Purport. A brahmachari is supposed to assist a sannyasi. Therefore, a brahmachari should not try to instruct a sannyasi. That is the etiquette. Consequently, Damodar should not have advised Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of his duty. So we can see that Lord Chaitanya is being a little sarcastic in his comments here, that sort of taking the instructions or corrections of Damodar Pandit with a little tongue-in-cheek here. So text 28, you should all therefore remain here in the Lachala for some days while I tour the sacred places of pilgrimage alone. That's the end of Lord Chaitanya's quotes. Inhasa Bharavasha Prabhu Hayeye Gune Dosharupa Chalikari Guna Ashvadane. Actually, the Lord is controlled by the good qualities of all his devotees. On the pretense of attributing faults, he takes all these qualities. Purport. All the accusations made by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu against his beloved devotees actually showed his great appreciation of their intense love for him. So we were listening to a tape yesterday, I guess, and Srila Prabhupada was saying that this is the spiritual world, that the devotee actually becomes better than Krishna. Why do you want to become, people want to say, let's become one with God. He said, why become one with God? Become better than God. So, like that, Mother Yashoda is chastising Krishna with a stick, right? And he steals the butter and what have you. And those that are in parental affection are caring about Krishna and chastising Krishna and correcting Krishna, and sometimes his friends are thinking, I'm a bigger man than you, I can beat you at this sport or like that. So Prabhupada said, this is the spiritual world, that all these relationships exist, that one can actually become better than God. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually appreciating the intense love that the devotees had for him. Yet he mentioned these faults one after another as if he were offended by their intense affection. The personal associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sometimes behaved contrary to regulative principles out of intense love for the Lord. And because of their love, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself sometimes violated the regulative principles of a sannyasi. In the eyes of the public, such violations are not good. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so controlled by his devotees' love that he was obliged to break some of the rules. Although accusing them, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was indirectly indicating that he was very satisfied with their behavior in pure love of Godhead. Therefore, in verse 27, he mentions that his devotees and associates place more importance on love of Krishna than on social etiquette. Of course, it's not that we as aspiring devotees should now think like that, that I am a Vaishnava, therefore I can abandon social etiquette, break the rules of my varna or my ashram because I'm in love of Krishna, so therefore I'm above these rules and regulations. Rather, Srila Prabhupada himself, Shakti Vaishnavatar Mahabhagavat Acharya, was very strict about keeping the etiquette of the sannyas ashram and social etiquette in all regards and set that example for us. So we are not to imitate but to follow the example and instructions of the pure devotee to safeguard us from our tendencies to live wildly and without any rules and regulations and become almost like sahajya, taking things very cheaply. So, like Prabhupada would often quote, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. So he would like that when the devotees were living in a particular country, they would follow the laws and etiquette of that social system. There are many instances of devotional service rendered by previous acharyas who did not care about social behavior when intensely absorbed in love for Krishna. Unfortunately, as long as we are within this material world, we must observe social customs to avoid criticism by the general populace. This is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire. Jai Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So tomorrow we'll begin on text 30, on page 15. Any comments?
I don't know about all of you guys here, but I can tell you. But I find it very difficult to adhere to two different standards when it comes to civilization. We have the Vedic system, which is just for Prabhupada, and then we have the big huge world outside. And I just can't get it into my head. How shall we keep our thing but still convert all these people? Mm-hmm. And still not break their rules and not break our rules.
Okay, so yes, yeah, so Prabhu was asking that here we are trying to, you know, take to the Vaishnava social system, etiquette, varnashram dharma like that, but yet we're living in this big material world where everybody else is doing something different. So how to, I would guess, both bring that to them, how to live in this world and not become like that, breaking the Vaishnav or Vedic culture, how not to become living like the material culture, and at the same time how to bring them, those who are in material culture, to this standard of Vedic culture. So Srila Prabhupada did say that I have only performed half of my work, the other half is remaining, this implementing the Varnashrama system. But at the same time, it was emphasized that in this age of Kali, we don't have the time, we don't have the facility to fully implement all the details of Varnashrama Dharma society, you know? So at least for the devotees who are coming and taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada and his temples and his communities, that while we're in at least the association of devotees, we should try to practice the Vedic etiquette, right, as to our best ability. And then when we go out in the world, because we're chanting our rounds, we're taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada, we may externally seem to behave like the karmis, right, having some job or some school or some family and, you know, business interactions and talking with the opposite sex on so many matters. But it doesn't mean that we're breaking the principles in our heart, right, because we're protected by the lotus feet of the spiritual master, Guru and Krishna. And gradually, one by one, the people that we meet, we can bring them to the real essence of Vedic culture. The real essence of Vedic culture is never to forget Krishna and to always remember him. So even though externally we may not have, you know, the government set up the way it should be, and the family situations and social systems set up the way Vedic society would be, if we can at least bring this point to people's lives, how to remember Krishna and never to forget him, then no matter what walk of life we're in, we should be able to give up the four pillars of sinful life and take to the chanting of Hare Krishna, and in this way remember Guru and Krishna. But it's not that we're going to necessarily change the face of the world, you know. So for the general mass of people, we hear Prabhupada repeating so many times on lecture tapes as we're listening to them, that Prabhupada said, for the general mass of people, it's Harinam Sankirtan. Bring the people to this, make them attracted to the chanting of the holy name and feed them prasadam. And then later, when they're actually a little purified and they've actually got some attraction now and they want to stick around, then implement rules and regulations. But don't, he was heavy like this. I mean, we were listening to one tape just the other day. He said, don't just start like this, telling people four regular principles, you know, thou shalt not do this, 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 and that, and you must do this, 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 and that. He said, rather get first, attract people to the holy name and prasadam, and then gradually the rules and regulations will come. He said like that to his disciples. If you people call me strict, you know, I think it was Allen Ginsberg that said, oh, Swamiji, you are so conservative, you know. And Prabhupada was, I'm not conservative. If I told you all the rules like that are in the, you know, scriptures about how to be a Vaishnava, you know, all the etiquettes and Brahmin brahminical life, he said he would faint, right? He didn't even tell us one tiny, you know, we're thinking it's so strict, but it's actually so lenient. So it may not be for the general mass of people, but at least for those who want the brahminical culture, the temples are here, and we should, to the best of our ability, you know, live accordingly. Anything else? I don't know if that really answers your question, but... But yeah, Vardashram's a big question, and like I said, the purport or bottom line of Varnashram is to bring people to that level of never forget, always remember Krishna and never forget him. Anything else? Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopina Vallabha Girimale Bhari. Jaya Gopina Vallabha Girimale Bhari. Yajara Nandana Gajajana Nandana. Yajara Nandana Gajajana Nandana. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Jaya Prabhupada 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada Jayam Vishnu Padhar Mahamsa Parivajakacharya Ashtotarashata Shri Shima His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jaya Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jaya Garantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jaya All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Just one quick point on Prabhu's question here that we did hear on one tape Srila Prabhupada was saying that unless and until this movement has the support of the government, that it cannot become successful on a wide scale. I mean, there will be people successfully engaging in Krishna consciousness and going back to Godhead, but as far as a world movement to totally conquer the mass of people, Prabhupada said, unless and until this movement has government support, it cannot be successful. And he gave examples of Christianity and Buddhism, etc., being supported by a king, by a government, and therefore it flourished. So the implementation of Varnashram on a general wide scale, we don't expect it to be successful until our preaching is more successful, preaching to the big guys who can be in the Kshatriya positions, because the Kshatriyas implement, Brahmanas just advise and preach. So it may not be our job to implement Varnashram, you know, at this stage, but we can at least preach about it and hope that in the future someone can take that position. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 13, Description of Future Manus, text number 12 is where we begin today. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So text number 12, Tatra Devasudevaya.
tapaso viraja amrita prabha tesham virochana sutto balya indra bhavishyati. In the period of the eighth Manu, among the demigods will be the Sutapas, the Virajas, and the Amritaprabhas. The king of the demigods, Indra, will be Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochana. So in each of the 14 Manu periods, the demigods that are in charge of the universal affairs of the universe change positions, just like the President of the United States can only be in there for one or two terms, and then they must change the personality who's in that post. So during the reign of the eighth Manu, the post of Indra will become occupied by Bali Maharaj. Text number 13, please repeat. Tatve mam yatamanaya Vishnave yapadachayam Radham indrapadam hitva Tatvasidham avapsyati Tatve mam yatamanaya Vishnave yapadachayam Radham indrapadam hitva Tatvasidham avapsyati. The word, please repeat. Tatva, giving in charity. Imam, this entire universe. Yachamanaya, who was begging from him. Vishnave, unto Lord Vishnu. Yaha, Bali Maharaj. Paratrayam, three paces of land. Radham, achieved. Indrapadam, the post of Indra. Hitva, giving up. Tata,